The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, plus a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by Katie Balls and Fraser Nelson. Well, Boris Johnson is having a meeting of G7 leaders on Tuesday to discuss the situation in Afghanistan. And he will be asking President Biden to extend the deadline by which troops are out of Afghanistan, which is at the end of this month. Fraser, what does this mean for the relationship between the US and the UK?
It's quite interesting that Britain's doing it this way. We know, the UK knows, that Biden is quite set on his 31st of August deadline. Britain is very frustrated by this because we can't hold the airports by ourselves. We've already got about 3,500 people out, but there's a lot more we need to get. Britain's problem is that we're calling people out to the airport to board the flight, but only about a quarter of those are calling are actually coming through to the airport. Now, this really surprised British officials. They were thinking, why should this be? They can only conclude that some people think it's a bit too dangerous to go outside in Kabul, that they don't, if they're Afghans wanting to leave the country, they don't particularly fancy bumping into Taliban checkpoints, having to say we're on their airports, on the way to the airport to get evacuated by the Brits. So Britain certainly wants more time. And to make a request, which looks like it will probably be denied by Joe Biden, is something I can see politically. I think it's a way of trying to highlight a divide between Britain and America to say, look, we're not happy with the Biden timetable here. And normally, you would only make this request to America if you knew it was going to be granted. And of course, meanwhile, you've got the Taliban saying to Biden, you better watch out because we won't take it kindly if you do extend beyond the 31st of August.
We've got a clip of that, which you can listen to here.
President Biden announced this agreement that until 31st of August, they would withdraw all their military forces. So if they extend it, that means they are extending occupation, while there is no need for that. I think that it will deteriorate the relation, that will create mistrust between us. If they or intent on continuing the occupation, so it will provoke a reaction.
Katie, so it's not fully within the US's gift to extend this deadline. It is also down to the Taliban as to whether they accept the decision to continue. But it is also the case, and something that Foreign Office Minister James Cleverly accepted last night when he was on the radio, that a lot of people can't get to Kabul and they're just not going to be able to get out of Afghanistan. Is that something that you think that the UK is preparing for in other ways to try to support these people once the evacuation has to end?
Well, I think we're looking at different ways to support particularly those who remain, but we're also at the same time hearing about sanctions. And we're hearing warnings about what sanctions would mean for those left in Afghanistan. Would it really hurt the Taliban or would it hurt innocent civilians? But I think obviously the first and foremost focus right now for the UK side is still getting people out. That's why they're trying to extend this. And I think that even though we're hearing these warnings from the Taliban, as we just heard then, I think on the UK side, they believe that there could still be a negotiation here. If the US decide that they want to stay longer, that could be something that moves the dial. I don't think the UK, A, thinks it can hold the airport alone for the reasons that Fraser outlined, but two, the UK does not believe it has the inside track for the Taliban for a negotiation on this. So it still is pivotal on America for all of those things. But I think just going back to, I suppose, Boris Johnson and the UK government's relationship with the US. I think this intervention from Boris Johnson is interesting for a few reasons. First off, as Fraser says, we have a situation where we have a UK side asking for something they do not know if they're going to get, but usually this would be something you would say knowing it was the case. So I think an aspect of this is obviously there's a blame game. You've already heard James Cleverly, James Heapy, Ben Wallace, all say people will be left behind. So there's a question as to who is blamed for that. I think by making clear the UK side would like to stay longer, you have a situation where if Joe Biden does turn around and say no, there's clearly going to be strong international criticism against Joe Biden. And you can see even more criticism heaped on him in terms of the humanitarian crisis. But then at the same time, I think if you start to think about the Tory government and the Tory party and how much criticism and anger there has been towards Boris Johnson and his ministers like Dominic Raab in the past week, I also think that there is a downside from the UK perspective, not just in terms of getting people out in Afghanistan, but if Joe Biden sticks to that date anyway, this whole crisis has clearly had appalling consequences in Afghanistan, but it's also cutting free to the identity of the Tory party a bit, because lots of people pride themselves on having strong defence, or having this special relationship with America and being a hard and a soft power. So the fact that the UK weren't consulted in the first place, I think if now you have this public intervention and it appears to have little cut through, it's just going to exacerbate this increasing feeling that the special relationship isn't special. In fact, it might be irrelevant.
Fraser, just on blows to Tory pride and identity, something that a lot of Conservative MPs have been pushing for a long time is a more distant relationship with China and obviously greater scepticism towards Russia. Now, that seems to be in direct contradiction to the line from Dominic Raab over the weekend that the West might have to bring in countries with a potentially moderating influence like Russia and China, however uncomfortable that is. That's what he wrote in the Sunday Telegraph at the weekend. How is that actually possible, given that our relationship, particularly with China, is becoming steadily more hostile?
I think that's a really significant moment, actually. I mean, the obvious consequence, one of the many consequences of the Western failure in Afghanistan, will be that from now on, it will be to China, to Iran, and to Russia that the Taliban listen. It will no longer be to the United States, Britain, or any of the allies. That's simply the realpolitik. We tried, we failed. Meanwhile, Russia, China, and Iran have been building influence with the Taliban. It's quite significant to see Dominic Raab admit so early on now that this is the way things are. If there's a new sphere of influence, it doesn't involve us. And if we want to influence the Afghans, we need to influence our former enemy, the Taliban, via our quasi-enemies, which is China and Russia. I mean, in the last Strategic Defence Review, Britain did see Russia as more of an antagonist than China. It was a lot more emollient to China than a lot of Tory backbench MPs would have liked. So I don't think it's entirely inconsistent there. But it's interesting to just to recognise now that the defeat of an American superpower does mean that whole region is now pretty much bereft of American influence. And I do think this will have consequences for Anglo-Chinese relations if we think that having an in with Beijing is our way of having a diplomatic influence amongst what you might call the greater China, China's near abroad, China's sphere of influence. This is something which the Chinese have been wanting to build up for a long, long time. Not an empire as such, but a diplomatic environ. And that now does seem to include Afghanistan.
Katie, you've written a lot about the China campaign, in particular within the Conservative Party. And one of the features of the past week has been how vocal and critical senior Conservative backbenchers have been of the government. Do you think they're going to gear up for another fight on this, or is this a slightly different matter to the issues that they have campaigned on in terms of British-Chinese relations?
Well, it's different to a degree, but the same people who've been very critical of the UK government not taking a hardline enough approach on China are also very critical of the fact that the UK went along with what the US did, that there was withdrawal, that the situation as it stands is where we got to. And I think a lot of them are strong believers in intervention from the West. So I think the question is, now that is off the table, where do you go to from there? Because I think some pragmatists might decide that, well, you need to wield influence somehow. But I think if you think of some of the most vocal members of that China group, and also I think people who made strong points in the past week in terms of Tom Tugendhat and others, I think that they will have different views to Boris Johnson on the way to proceed and are going to be very vocal about that.
Moving on to COVID, the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation is looking at the booster programme, or the potential for using some of those vaccines as part of the supply for jabs across the world. Fraser, there's been a debate across the world about the best way to use booster jabs. And as has been so often the case in this pandemic, people have been looking to Israel, haven't they?
They have. And Israel, interestingly, is now coming across as a case study in what not to do. The feeling in Britain is that the Israelis they were too close in giving the first and the second vaccines. As a result of that, they're now left themselves vulnerable to immunity waning, and they can now see a fourth wave coming in vaccinated people because that immunity did die down quite a lot, certainly in vaccinated people. There's some reports from Israel that the natural immunity is proving stronger than vaccinated immunity. And the other thing that Britain thinks is that we won't be as bad as Israel for two more reasons. One is that Israel's going through a Delta wave, which we had several months ago, and that the other reason is that we're more likely to get our boosters out quickly, early. Israel's only started in the last 10 days, 2 weeks, getting its boosters out. Ours are getting ready quite soon, and they're going to be combined with the flu jab. That's the idea, because what Britain really worries about is a double whammy of a COVID surge plus a flu surge. And it's fascinating throughout this pandemic to see there's hardly a country that was held up to be doing the right thing initially that is not subsequently hit trouble, and vice versa. So it's strange. Now, Israel ought to have been the first country in the world to vaccinate its way out of lockdown, to show that they got their hands on Pfizer, better supply than almost anybody else. They managed to have figures showing beyond any doubt that the vaccination was pushing down rates of the disease. But rather than ending up virus-free, they're now bringing back restrictions. They're now worrying about a fourth wave, and they're seeing their hospitals start to fill again for reasons which even the Israelis don't properly understand. I think there's a lot of nervousness in Britain about the Israeli situation, and one minister told me that the thing to watch for will be if Israeli pensioners start to get sick, because obviously the pension age group are the ones most likely to get hospitalised and ones most likely to die. In the fourth wave, Britain's hospitalisations have been low as a rate of infection, but that's mainly because of the youth of those being infected. The average age of somebody testing positive for COVID in Britain has been 28. Your average 28-year-old is highly unlikely to go to hospital as a result of it. But now Israel's offering us a glimpse of what might be around the corner, which will underline, I think, ministerial efforts to get the booster jabs out as soon as possible.
Thank you, Fraser. Thank you, Katie. And thank you for listening.